Phyllis Wise has been the chancellor at the University of Illinois Urbana campus for 2 years. Since coming here, she's launched an ambitious program aimed at promoting long-term development to ensure that the U of I Urbana campus provides top-quality education and services for Illinoisans over the next several decades. In the meantime, Chancellor Wise is dealing with day-to-day issues on campus, from financial challenges to relations with faculty to new policies on campus smoking and the concealed carry of weapons. I'm Jim Meadows, and Chancellor Phyllis Wise is my guest on Focus Today. Our program continues after the news. Welcome to Focus. I'm Jim Meadows. Phyllis Wise became chancellor of the University of Illinois' Urbana campus in the fall of 2011, and almost immediately she began a sort of on-campus listening tour that she followed up with a process she calls Visioning Future Excellence, setting future goals for the campus, both long and short term. Some of those goals and studies show up in the latest U of I strategic plan, which was announced a couple of months ago. We'll talk about those goals and other things going on around the U of I Urbana campus. But Chancellor Wise, welcome back to Focus.
Thank you very much, Jim. It's wonderful to be here.
And if you have a question for Chancellor Wise, give us a call at 1-800-222-9455. That's toll free, 1-800-222-WILL. You can also email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. And we welcome your questions on Facebook and Twitter at Focus580. And when you started as chancellor a couple of years ago, you went on, I think you called it a listening and learning tour.
I did.
What did that really entail?
Well, I took the opportunity to try and visit every single academic unit and almost all of our administrative units. I also was able to visit alumni groups in Chicago and New York and also on the West Coast to really learn more about why people wanted to be at Illinois, what they got out of their experience here, what made them loyal, dedicated, energetic, people who engaged with the university in various ways. It was a great way to learn more about the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign.
You know, I'd imagine if you could go to any college campus and see some of the same sorts of things coming from people, was there anything in particular that struck you, what you got in talking to people at Illinois?
I think the thing that was most memorable about that listening and learning tour was the one universally common thing that came up was that people who were on campus still said they were here because of the people. That it was the generosity, the collaborative culture, the willingness to ask each other questions and help each other that made them stay here. It was really heartwarming.
Now, from there, you went to the Visioning Future Excellence, and I've been trying to figure out the right noun for this. Process, initiative, what do you want to call
it? Well, we called it an initiative because we wanted to convey the feeling that this was an intense exercise that probably would be for a certain period of time. It was a follow-up to the listening and learning tour and allowed me to meet with small groups of people on campus and off of campus to ask the question, two questions actually. So first was, what are society's greatest challenges going to be in the next 20 to 50 years? And the second question was, what is the role of a preeminent public research university with a land-grant mission and global impact? What is the role of that kind of an institution in meeting the challenges?
Essentially, this campus here.
Yes, yes.
And there was a report that came out of that in July. Is that the end of Visioning Future Excellence? Is it done now, or is it, there more?
Yeah, no, it is. I would consider it pretty much done. What we did from that is collate all of the data and realize that from that arose six different themes that we should really concentrate on. And it was the foundation for what we called the big vision, and that led into the strategic plan.
Okay. And the strategic plan, really, that's something that's done university-wide from time to time. I gather the last one was in 2006.
Right.
And then one just came out a couple of months ago.
Well, so each of the campuses were asked to write a strategic plan. And so the strategic plan that you're familiar with is the one for our campus that covers our goals, our vision, our hopes, our plans for the next 3 years. And the UIS campus and the UIC campus have also created their own strategic plans. And now there is a person in the president's office who is putting together these three, finding the common elements, and making that the overall university strategic plan.
So that's going on right now.
Right,
and
right.
And out of that will come, I guess, the master strategic plan, and hopefully there are some common threads for the three
right.
campuses to
right.
work in there.
I think there will be some distinctive threads of which where one campus will be able to take the lead and other ones which are in common, which we should collaborate on and create synergies.
Well, I was looking at the Urbana campus's strategic plans and some of its goals. One of the ones that came out to me, and I had heard about this before, was the idea of hiring 500 new faculty over the next 5 to 7 years.
Right.
And I was looking in that, remembering that the university actually did early retirement buyouts in
right.
2010 when more than 480 employees, don't know how many are faculty, but
right.
they took part, and of course, in 2012, not something that the university had any say about, but a lot of people decided to retire that year because they thought a quirk in the pension formula said that that's the best year to retire. So you lost a lot of people that
right.
year.
We did lose a lot of people over the last, I would say, 5 years. The combination of the recession and particular budget constraints, and then also, as you mentioned, the pension issues that worried some of our faculty last year. So when we say 500 new faculty, some of them are going to be replacements of faculty who left. There are two ways that we're recruiting new faculty. One is to replace faculty where the student demand is particularly intense and where we don't have enough faculty to be able to cover the student needs. And the other one is to take advantage of our strategic plan and do cluster hiring around some of the themes that arose from the Visioning Future Excellence exercise. So we're concentrating on energy and the environment, on health and wellness, and social equality and cultural understanding, and doing cluster hires around those three themes this year, because we believe that if we can recruit 3 to 5 people who can collaborate easily, that we will be able to do innovative learning, innovative teaching, and also be able to be very competitive for some of the research grant opportunities that we believe will be coming up. And that way, be able to make the University of Illinois more prominent, more visible, more impactful, more respected in a relatively short period of time.
Can you give any specific examples of where these areas in the university might be where you would do these sort of hirings and where funding opportunities through grants may appear?
Right. So, as I said, we're concentrating on energy and the environment. We believe that areas of funding for energy are going to be increasing because that's such an important issue nationally. And health and wellness will allow us to be able to apply for grants, particularly within the NIH, but certainly also other private foundations and corporate opportunities as well.
Okay, so we're looking at private foundations, corporate opportunities. It sounds like one thing we're not looking at, and really in the long-term trend, is really the state of Illinois for any big bundles of money coming our way.
Well, if you know where they are, I hope you'll let me know, because I'd love to take advantage of them. I think that we realize that the state of Illinois is in considerable budgetary constraint, has considerable budgetary restraints. We will continue to make a pitch for the fact that higher education is critically important. And in that mix, the University of Illinois is critically important. But we also are making plans to look for revenue sources through philanthropy, through grants and contracts, so that we can make up for any losses that might continue to come from the state.
Does that mean an increased role for a body like the U of I Foundation?
Yes. We are working with the U of I Foundation very closely. We just recruited a new vice chancellor for institutional advancement who is our campus lead person. That person's name is Dan Peterson. And Dan has worked very hard already in developing his own plan of attack in terms of ways to develop relationships with people who are interested in investing in our campus, both our alums and well beyond just our alumni base.
We're talking with Chancellor Phyllis Wise of the University of Illinois Urbana Campus on Focus. I'm Jim Meadows, and if you have questions for Chancellor Wise, our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. You can email your questions to wyll-talk@illinois.edu. Well, we were talking about state funding, which I think really the long-term trend, even before the recent financial troubles, was that state funding for universities is not getting any bigger and maybe going down in terms of the total amount spent.
Right. I mean, if you look at the last 20 years across the United States, all states have been withdrawing their funding of their public higher education institutions. It's been a pretty constant decline, sometimes a little bit more quickly and sometimes a little bit less quickly. But the states have not been able to fund their state institutions the way they used to. So I don't think it takes a genius to realize that we better be planning for more of the same. And if it doesn't happen, we'll gladly accept as graciously as we possibly can any additional funding from the state.
At the same time, tuition for students at the U of I has gone up. Really, tuition for students at all state universities in Illinois has gone up substantially in the last few years. The figures I see for upper division tuition rates at this campus is a 28% rise from FY 2008 to FY 2012, but there are other campuses with bigger increases. I guess we're still, in total, one of the more expensive campuses around the state as the flagship university. You would sort of expect that. But that can be a real burden for students at the time when the role of a state university is to provide an educational opportunity that, say, private schools would not be able to do. What's going to happen to that in the next few years? What are the goals in terms of tuition rates and affordability?
So you bring up a really critical topic, and that is that we realize that we have raised tuition fairly assertively over the last 5 to 10 years, and we cannot afford to do that any longer because we realize that if we do that, we will have a large number of students who just will not be able to afford to come to the University of Illinois, the kinds of students that we would really, really like to have here, highly qualified, wonderful citizens of the state of Illinois. So we last year only raised tuition by 1.75%, I believe, percent. It amounted to less than $100 per semester. This year, we are also considering, if anything, a very modest increase in tuition because we realize the increased burden on students. At the same time, what we have been doing is putting much more money of our own into financial aid. And we have redoubled our efforts in terms of philanthropy to go to donors who would like to fund scholarships so that the students now who are coming to the University of Illinois will have the same kind of experiences that they had when they were students here 20, 30, 40 years ago. I have to say we want to make sure that we provide access to excellence and not just access, that we believe that we must continue to be the best kind of educational experience that the students can have. And so the dual way of trying to put more money into financial aid, that is putting more central money into it, as well as getting more scholarship funds from donors, is a two-pronged approach that we are using. And I believe that we put in another $20 million into financial aid just in the last couple of years of our own, and also have been successful in getting some scholarship money, including the part of the Granger Foundation gift to the College of Engineering is dedicated to scholarships.
How far do you think those efforts go in essentially reopening the door to students who have, you know, been, who have lost the opportunity to go here because of the tuition increases?
Right. Well, we certainly hope to be able to meet the needs of more students. I mean, when we accept a student and that student does not accept us and goes somewhere else and we ask them why they are not coming, the first reason they give us is money, that someone else, some other institution has offered them more scholarship money than we have been able to. And we don't want to lose those students. We accept them because we believe that they are highly qualified and also because we believe that they would benefit from being here at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. So those are the students we want to come, and we want to make sure that it's affordable for them.
Do you ever see a time, if things go well in other funding areas, that tuition levels can go down?
You know, to be honest with you, I don't see a time when tuition levels will go down. I hope that they will level off more and that rises will be modest. But I can tell you that the needs of students is increasing all the time. The kind of education that students expect today is different than the kind of education that students expected 20, 30, 40 years ago. The global experiences that they want to have, the research experience that they want to have, the service learning, the experiential learning, the kind of counseling that they're counting on, advising, career planning, all of these are what we would call out-of-the-classroom experiences that students now expect, and we want to provide that. But those all cost money, in addition to, obviously, keeping our classrooms technologically at the level where they can use the most current ways of learning. So there are all sorts of aspects of learning that our students, that we want to offer our students, and they actually expect.
I guess this question of just dealing with the expenses of college and the expenses of attending college dovetails into a goal in the strategic plan of a more inclusive and diverse student body, but also a more inclusive and diverse faculty and staff.
Mm-hmm.
And you're trying to reach those goals on both ends. Mm-hmm. I see some mention, as far as students are concerned, of increased need-based scholarship funds to ensure that the university is financially accessible to all qualified students. And I guess that's some of what we were talking about in the last few minutes.
Right. I think you're referring to the importance of diversity, whether or not you're talking about racial, ethnic, religious, economic, geographical, sexual orientation. All aspects of diversity, I think, are part of the definition of excellence. And so we are working very hard to make our campus diverse, both in terms of the faculty and in the staff and students. I shouldn't say both. I should say all three, faculty, staff, and students. And we're putting extraordinary efforts to making sure that not only are we attracting them, but that we have a kind of campus climate that is inclusive, that really welcomes diverse voices at any conversation. Because I am a true believer that if you have diverse voices around the table of any discussion, then any decision that is made will have incorporated the thoughts of different people and is likely to be applicable to more people than if you just talk with one kind of person.
Mm-hmm. Looking at the Visioning Future Excellence Initiative and looking for areas of study and research that make a significant and visible societal impact, making those decisions of what you're going to do over the next several decades, does that also entail, I guess, making decisions about what you're not going to do?
Yes.
And I can, you know, I can think of one, and maybe only, and maybe it's my fault. I can think of something that the university has decided that it's not going to continue with, the Institute of Aviation. I understand that Parkland College in Champaign is looking to take that over. That would be, I guess, one example. But how do you make those right. sort of decisions?
Well, decisions about what you are not going to do any longer are probably more challenging than decisions about what you do want to do. And I think they have to go hand in hand. We have to realize that what we have done for the last almost 150 years is not justification for doing it for the next 150 years. That if you are going to adopt new initiatives and new programs, that we have to take a very careful look at the programs that we are doing now to make absolutely sure that they are still central to the mission. And your example of the Institute of Aviation is an excellent one. It was a great program, but it was quite expensive and was serving very few students. And we found a way that it could continue, but under an agreement that Parkland College would take over the majority of the responsibility for it.
And was that decision really done because of, I mean, or at least partly because of financial considerations? You only have so much funding to work with. Some things have to go that are considered less valuable than other things.
So you're right. Before I got here, the campus went through what's called stewarding excellence, and it was a very careful evaluation of all aspects of campus activity. And the decisions to consolidate or even eliminate some programs was based upon whether it was central to the mission of the university still today, whether it was affordable, and whether it was important to the future of the mission of the university. And I think that, and it was many, many different committees, and an incredible effort on the part of then Interim Chancellor Easter and Interim Provost Wheeler and many different faculty and staff committees in which students were also involved, I believe, was a very, very carefully thought through and deliberate effort to make sure that everything that we were doing was absolutely essential to the future of the university.
Okay. Have those decisions been mostly made for a while, do you think? Or at this stage of the game, are there still, do you still see cutbacks and eliminations that may have to be done?
Well, most of the things have been done. We were able to find ways of saving roughly $17 million, recurring dollars. I think what we realized is that we shouldn't do this once every 20 to 50 years, that we should have an ongoing evaluation of all of our programs. And Provost Adeshida is working on ways to have evaluation and assessment of all of our departments and programs at an interval roughly every 8 years, to make sure that changes, either expansion or consolidation, should be considered.
Now, is that separate from, I had noticed an article, I think, in the Daily Illini a while back, or actually rather recently, about a new process of evaluating academic units that would go to having some outside body evaluate
yes.
them rather than having them self-evaluate?
So, yes, that is what the Daily Illini was talking about. What we are doing is the unit that is going to be evaluated or assessed does a self-study first and presents it to a small group of external people who come, who are preeminent people in great departments or great programs, who come and read the self-assessment and then come and actually visit with the department and beyond the department to make an evaluation and a recommendation to us.
Okay. Is this underway now or is this still being worked
yes,
on?
Yes, it is underway now and it is being piloted this year.
Okay. This all the last few minutes, I was thinking about this as I got an email in, someone asking, the writer is looking for specifics as to what cutbacks, if any, can you point to as being responsive as to what the writer calls the state's dire fiscal condition?
You know, right now we're in the process of making those kinds of decisions, and I think it's really important for us to use the shared governance process that is to go through several different steps of looking first at the programs themselves, then consulting with the faculty senate, the academic senate, in terms of whether or not they agree. And then as you mentioned earlier, it is hard to make changes that would consolidate or eliminate programs, probably harder than starting them. And so there's a long stepwise process that I actually think is underway, and I don't think it's appropriate for me to talk about any decisions because none have been made yet.
But you expect some decisions to be made in that department. Yes. Well, we're going to take a short break now. This is Focus on WILL. We're talking with the Chancellor of the U of I Urbana Campus, Phyllis Wise, and we'll be back in just a moment. This is Focus. We're back on WILL. I'm Jim Meadows, and my guest is Phyllis Wise, the Chancellor of the Urbana Campus of the University of Illinois. We've been talking about the Visioning Future Excellence Initiative, and we'll be talking about other pieces of university business. If you have a question for the Chancellor, the phone number is 1-800-222-9455, 1-800-222-9455, or 222-WILL. The email address is WILL-talk@illinois.edu, and you can send your questions to us on Twitter or Facebook at Focus 580. I was wondering about projects that the university has been going on, has going on with the People's Republic of China, both projects in China and also projects that Chinese institutions are doing here.
Yeah.
One I understand is that U of I is going to be opening up an office in Shanghai, I think, next month?
Yes, that's right. We're going to be opening up an office in Shanghai. I will actually be able to be there to do that officially. It's one of our ways of being able to be present there in a bigger way than just occasional visits. I think it's really important because there are opportunities that arise that we may not know about if we don't have that kind of presence.
Okay. There are already a lot of collaborations and relationships going on with, I don't know how many, but with...
Yeah, I'm not sure I know how many.
But both universities and also corporations in China.
Yes. So we have a long history of collaboration with China. Right after the Boxer Rebellion, we were one of the universities that accepted a large number of Chinese students. In the last century, we have increased the number of collaborations, educational ones back and forth with universities, as well as public-private partnerships with corporations in China. And we're really proud of the fact that we're one of the preeminent universities working with Chinese universities and Chinese corporations.
How does this benefit the university and the student body at the university back here in Urbana?
Well, you probably know that we have one of the highest number of Chinese students of any university in the United States, and we want to be sure that we are really ready to welcome them. We want to be sure that they are prepared for their experience here at Illinois. So part of the reason for having an office there is to be able to be available to answer any questions for students who are either thinking about coming or who have accepted our offer to come and who are preparing to come. It is really important that students who come from that far away are really ready for their learning experience that they'll have here.
Mm-hmm. I know that brings up a question from time to time about the high and, well, high is a relative term, but certainly increasing levels of international students at the University of Illinois. It certainly increases the diversity of the student body. They pay more than in-state students, which certainly can't hurt the university. I'm wondering, what does it mean for the rest of the student body at the U of I? Is this a zero-sum game where slots for students are being taken away because there are slots for international students, or is there room for everybody?
So We hope to always be able to accept as many of the highly qualified students as we possibly can. And we realize we are the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, and our first responsibility is to serve the citizens of Illinois. We accepted a larger number of Illinois residents this year than before, and we have maintained the number of Illinois residents as we have in the last few years in this year's incoming class that arrived in the fall. We have had increasing demand for slots by our international students, and because we are a very highly respected university in China and India and Western Europe, and so we find that the applications from international students are increasing, and they are also very qualified applicants. This last year, we accepted a certain number of international students, and what we call the take rate, that is the number of students who accepted us, outstripped our expectations. So we have a few more international students here this year than we expected, and we welcomed them with open arms, and we're hoping to provide them with great educational experiences. But what you asked also is a critically important element, and that is, what is in it for the students who are from Illinois and from other states in the United States? And in some ways, I think the students who are domestic students, particularly University of Illinois residents, get a global experience even just staying on campus. I don't think that replaces going abroad for a period of time to study, but it's a great introduction. And what I'm really hoping is that the exchanges between the international students and our domestic students get to be even better. And I know our Division of Student Affairs is trying to find ways, both having learning communities in the dorms, having events on campus throughout the year, but particularly in the fall when students first arrive, that make sure that the mixing is done so that it's not just a numbers game. It really is inclusiveness. It really is making sure that they bump into each other and really get to know each other and get to be friends by the time that they graduate.
And that's a real challenge, essentially, trying to social engineer the student body so that people will meet up in fruitful ways with each other.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it is a very large campus, both in terms of numbers of students as well as the area that the campus takes up. And once you decide to major in English or psychology or, you know, the arts or engineering, you tend to stick with the students who are majoring in the same discipline. What we really want to make sure is that within that discipline, you mix with as many different kinds of students with as many different life experiences as you possibly can. But also that if you're an engineering major, that you don't always stay just with engineering majors. And so we try and schedule a decent number of events where we totally mix it up.
Mm-hmm. Can you give me an example of events with that goal in mind?
Yeah, so one of them is actually our quad day in the very early fall, where student groups have displays and other students can come and just get to know that if you're interested in this area or that area, you can come and join this club or that club. And you don't have to live with those students. They don't have to be in your same dorm. They don't have to be in your same major, but you have a certain interest that you would like to learn more about.
I know WILL also usually has a table out.
Yes.
I've walked through there. It's like the entire student body is out
there. It's amazing, isn't it?
It's extremely busy, yes.
Yeah.
So that does sound like an opportunity for people to meet each other mm-hmm. when they would not otherwise. Something else in connection with this larger topic is there's going to be a Confucius Institute established within the College of Education here. There's a signing ceremony set for, I think, tomorrow.
Yes.
A lot of campuses have these, but maybe you could talk a little bit about what it means to be hosting a Confucius Institute.
Right. The Confucius Institutes are institutes that are sponsored by the Hanban in China.
The Hanban is
an institution that helps cultural exchanges between China and various institutes in different countries, particularly the United States. Their goal is to make sure that we understand the culture of China. Our goal is to make sure that the culture of China is incorporated into the mission of our university. And the Confucius Institute that is going to be established here at the University of Illinois is being sponsored by the College of Education. So it's usually one university in China with another university in the United States, but it doesn't necessarily have to be limited to that.
Okay. In all of these projects working with China, have there been agreements made or negotiated, or is it just something that the university is mindful of wanting to ensure, you know, whatever may happen, the academic freedom and integrity of U of I faculty and students?
So both. We absolutely want to make sure that the integrity of our students and our faculty is maintained in any agreement that we make, whether or not it's with a foreign country or even an MOU with another university. So you asked if this is fairly free-flowing and spontaneous. I think that any time that we have a long-term engagement with another university or another group, we write what is called a memorandum of understanding so that both parties are sure of what we have agreed to and can look back at that MOU if anything comes up that we didn't expect.
I'm thinking that as we've been talking in various topics here, which touch on seeking a diverse university, if working in these areas touches on your own experience in academia and also as an administrator, and, you know, as a woman, as an Asian American, there must be experiences in your background that you touch upon.
Yes. I mean, I think as a woman and as an Asian American, diversity has been part of my blood, part of my DNA. I think I appreciated all of the opportunities I've had throughout my life, starting from when I was very young, being the only Chinese family in the community that I grew up in New Jersey, all the way through my professional career where I was one of only one or two women in my department. When I first started my faculty position, I was one of very few chairs of physiology when I became the chair of physiology. Even as the chancellor here, when I was the interim president at the University of Washington, I was the first Asian American woman to ever lead a public research university. So being a minority has been part of almost every step in my personal and professional life, and I think I really appreciate the opportunities I was given by being accepted and welcomed in the different communities in which I've been engaged. And I want to make sure that those kinds of opportunities are made for other people.
Do you see, when you look at academia and the universities in general in the U.S., progress being made, growth being made in these areas?
Yes, I really do think that progress is being made. I think we are not there yet. But I think that progress has been made, and if we keep on working hard, it'll get even better.
This is Focus on WILL. We're talking with Chancellor Phyllis Wise of the University of Illinois Urbana Campus. I wanted to mention in a couple of days, on Thursday, we'll be talking with the presidents of another piece of higher education, and that's the presidents of two area community colleges, Tom Ramage of Parkland College in Champaign and Alice Jacobs of Danville Area Community College in Danville. And we'll try to see how that piece of the puzzle fits in. That'll be on Thursday's edition of Focus. If you have questions now for Chancellor Wise, our phone number is 1-800-222-9455, 1-800-222-WILL. We're on Twitter and Facebook at Focus580. And our email address is wyll-talk@illinois.edu. Wanted to bring up a few other topics, and one of them is something you brought up in an email this morning, and that's email to the campus, that is, and that's about how the U of I at Urbana will become a smoke-free campus on January 1st.
Mm-hmm.
And this is going to be everyone everywhere, smoking everything. as it says, as you write here, it will include all forms of burning tobacco, including cigarettes, cigars, pipes, hookahs, cigarillos. And that already brings up a question to me. E-cigarettes, what is the status of e-cigarettes under the smoke-free campus policy? Has that been determined?
So I need to get a little bit more information on that. As far as I understand, this is not involved.
We're having some negotiations between here and our campus spokesman, Robin Kaler, who's coming in to perhaps shed some light on this particular topic. Hi, Robin.
Hello. How are you?
Fine.
I'm sorry. We're not quite at that granular level for the chancellor, but we have determined they will not be allowed.
Okay. So no e-cigarettes as well.
Correct.
And is there a rationale, mm-hmm. an argument behind that?
Yeah, I mean, there's information, data that shows they may be addictive as well, that sort of thing. You're just kind of separating them out just creates a lot of confusion. If someone sees someone with one, they're not sure if it's a real cigarette. There were quite a few pros and cons, and the cons really outweighed the pros.
Okay. Know. Robin Kaler, thank you very much.
Sure.
Thank you, Robin.
Chancellor Wise, you know, this brings up questions I'm sure people are asking. This is really a campus-wide ban, which means it includes all housing on campus, whether it's freshman dorms or whether it's family housing like over at Orchard Downs.
That's true.
And it also includes, say, sporting events, which bring in large crowds from out of town, out of the university, so like at the tailgate parties around the football games?
It involves all campus facilities, and so it would include any tailgating on our campus facilities.
Okay. If you're deciding to do this now, I'm imagining you're thinking it must be feasible and that perhaps attitudes have changed over the years about smoking.
Well, for sure, attitudes have changed over the last couple of decades. With regards to smoking, I think people appreciate today much more the health hazards of smoking and of secondary smoke. We are not the first big research campus or big campus to institute this policy. I think it is in the best interests of all of our students, our faculty, our staff, and our visitors. And so we've studied this for a long time and are very, very adamant in the fact that we will be a smoke-free campus starting next year.
And part of what you wrote in the email this morning was about efforts to promote tobacco cessation programs throughout the campus, both through the various health services on campus, but also you'll be selling nicotine replacement products at the Atlanta Union, at the State Farm Center. What sort of things will these be?
Well, we are still working on all of these details. I have to say, what we are trying to do is make it as easy as possible for people to be able to make behavioral changes that will prevent them from needing to smoke any longer.
Okay. Has it been worked out how this will be enforced when violations occur and what sort of penalties will be involved, whether they're for students and employees or visitors to the campus?
Right. So we've had several committees working on this aspect of it because we realize that if we have this policy and then there's no enforcement of the policy, it really is pretty empty. During the initial period of time, right after the implementation of the policy, we will be handing out warnings. And after that, we will be figuring out what stronger means we will need to do to enforce this policy. What we're hoping, actually, is that the signs will be preventative and that people will realize that we're serious about this. And so it's always nicer not to have to bring out your sticks until you've used a lot of carrots. And the carrots are providing prevention programs, providing notice, providing reminders that this is a smoke-free campus.
Okay. As far as penalties, are some of these still being hammered out in the next couple of months before everything takes effect?
Right.
So we may hear more specifics about this later in December?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I wanted to ask you, this is a question relating to Chief Illiniwek. There was news last month of a trademark settlement that the mm-hmm. university reached with the Honor the Chief Society, which is a group that supports the revival of Chief Illiniwek. Can you tell me anything about what this dispute was about and how it was settled?
Well, I think it really it surrounds the fact that the trademark that the society had filed to use the trademark, and we have settled with them that the trademark is ours and they will not be able to use it. I think the settlement really clarifies things that might not have been clear before that.
Okay. This, I gather, the Honor the Chief Society is still wanting to revive Chief Illiniwek, and they can still, of course, do that, but they do not have access to the Chief Illiniwek trademark.
That is true. We are not endorsing or allowing any university-sponsored event to include the chief.
Okay, and that also raises the questions about the holding of events which include not the official symbol, not any official Chief Illiniwek performer, because there are none now, but performers sponsored by other organizations who they see as being new Chiefs Illiniwek.
So I'm not sure I quite understand your question.
I mean, under the trademark consideration, can other people put on a costume and perform as Chief Illiniwek, whether or not they can hold on to that name as being a university symbol?
I see what you mean. Well, I believe that there is an issue of freedom of speech, which we certainly are not going to violate, but it is not going to be any official Chief Illiniwek.
Okay, and it's important for the university that's made clear then.
Yes.
Okay. News Gazette reported a few months ago that you had traveled to Oklahoma to meet with leaders of the Peoria tribe, and they are the last surviving tribe of the old Illini or Illinois Confederation. What did you discuss?
You know, yes, I did travel down and meet with Chief Froman and Second Chief Dollar Hyde, and I took a few of my colleagues down with me to talk about ways that we can promote a respectful relationship with them, to be able to welcome more students from the Peoria tribe to the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, to provide the kind of education that Native Americans would value and benefit from. And then more recently, we invited Chief Froman and his colleagues, as well as the chief from the Miami tribe, to come here.
They're actually headquartered in the same county.
That's right. They're adjacent to each other. Mm-hmm. And the Miami tribe has had a very, very good relationship with Miami University in Oxford, Ohio. And so we've been learning from them. And we've set out a plan. We've just given him a draft of an MOU in terms of what we will be doing in the future with them. And I'm very excited about that.
These sort of things that you would do in the future, what might they involve?
How we can raise more money for scholarships, how we can possibly be doing research in sustainability. They have a great program on being able to make sure that rarefied species of fish aren't lost, and we are doing similar kinds of research with them. Also, there is work being done on genomics that we might be able to work with them on, and also they're very interested in entrepreneurship. So there will be some of our students in entrepreneurship in the College of Business that will be going down to the Peoria tribe and visiting them and teaching them and learning from them as well.
This is interesting to see now, because I know that during the time when Chief Illiniwek was the official symbol of the university and the controversy was in full flower, there seemed to be a definite no one's talking to each other policy between the tribe and the university. I think the university felt that as long as the conflict was going on, their hands were tied.
I didn't know about that.
It was before your time.
Yeah, it was. But all I know is that, you know, since the Peoria tribe, we are on Peoria tribe land, that it's really important as part of diversity, as part of cultural understanding, as part of respect for the traditions. I think it's really important that we develop a really respectful relationship with them. And Chief Froman has been wonderful in being equally open as I am to the developing of that relationship.
Okay. You know, we only have about a minute left on the program, and I'm just thinking about all the things we talked about today, connecting with your job as chancellor. You're still doing research, aren't you?
I'm doing a little bit of research.
Where do you find the time to put on the lab coat?
Well, I don't put on a lab coat anymore, I must admit. I mean, I do it collegially with colleagues here. I had an NIH grant, which I had been funded by the NIH for 32 years, which last year, when it came time to renew it, I decided that I better concentrate on being the chancellor. So my research now is really done in a secondary and tertiary manner with colleagues.
What subjects are you, what research are you engaged in? Right
yeah, now? So my research area is looking at how hormones influence the brain, particularly how estrogens affect the brains of females in allowing protection of the brain against neurodegeneration, and also in modulating the way people learn and remember.
Have you been finding out? I mean, we really have no time, so I don't really ask you as yes or no, but I've been finding out some interesting things.
Absolutely. Here. Absolutely. So in one sentence, I would say that we're learning that the brain is very plastic and that hormones are one of the factors that influence it.
Well, maybe we can have you on, come back at another time to talk about your research.
That would be lovely.
Well, Chancellor Phyllis Wise, thank you very much for being on Focus with us today.
Thank you, Jim.
Today's show produced by Lindsay Moon, Jason Croft, our technical director, who handles your calls. Sari Lesk is our intern, helping with production and research. Tomorrow, we're putting together a program on the tornadoes that have ravaged parts of Illinois and surrounding states. That's on tomorrow's show here on Focus on WILL.